Greetings, citizens of Earth. You are barking a happy tune with my pal Smurf of Smurf and the Magic Tones on 5280 Geek.
Live from the Figgis Studios, it is Weekend Geek Update. Smurf here. What is up, my friends? My fellow listeners, my diehards, true and blue, ride or dies. I don't know how many other cliches I can try and throw out there before I take a sip of water. Of water. I promise. Really. This is your Weekend Geek Update. We have been away. We have been busy. We have been out there in the trenches to bring you back whatever crazy, wide-eyed, bright-eyed story that strikes my fancy, then to kind of fill you in on some of the adventures and things that are coming down the pipe. We do have a sponsor. It is Mother's Day. It's an amazing time of year, but I'm actually referring to Mother's Day, the movie by writer and director Charles Kaufman, who will be in person for the Mother's Day event this Friday, May 17th at 7 p.m. We'll be at the Bug Theater, which is at, I believe, 3654 Navajo Street in Denver, Colorado. So if you're a local person, tickets are still available. There will be a Q&A with Charles at the end of the film, and you'll be able to ask him some hard-hitting questions. And I don't know if he'll answer any questions about his brother, Lloyd Kaufman, who we have had at Colorado Festival of Horror. Excited to have Charles out here. I don't know if any of the Kaufman clan will be in tow with Charles, but it'll be nice to sit down, have a little talkie with him at the end, see the horror film Mother's Day, which if you haven't seen is kind of disturbing. And yeah, I mean, not like the Nun disturbing, but it's still kind of out there, just saying. But come and judge for yourself. This Friday, May 17th, the Bug Theater. That is our sponsor. Yay! Now, on to the Geek Update. Weekend Geek? I don't know where I was going to go with that, to be honest with you. I was going to open with a song, but then the song I was going to sing kind of fell out of my head. So I was like, well, we'll just slip into it real easy-like and see what happens. I should tell everybody the story of how I almost lost my hand. And it's quite a riveting story, and I know you're sitting there like, oh, Smurf, what did you mean? Are you speaking facetiously? No, like literally, I had a car come down on my hand on Free Comic Book Day and almost knocked it off at the wrist. It was short of terrifying. However, the guardian angel of Highway 36 was kind enough to pull over and help lift the car off of my hand, which is fully functional, still attached, a little swollen, kind of bruised, a little beaten up, but nonetheless functioning. Thank God it is still there, and it could have gone so much worse. That's just the shortened version. There's a whole story behind that, but not to consume the time with my trivial matters of almost having my wrist lopped, my hand lopped off at the wrist. So there you go. I am fine. Okay. And that's how I started the conversation when I called me mom. All right. First of all, I am fine. And you got to know I don't know what kind of relationship people have with their parents, but anytime that we got into trouble or something went sideways or we were playing sports and we got hurt, we always started out the conversation, all right, first of all, I am fine, you know, and you think that is the best way to disarm a situation or to keep someone calm. Yeah, it's not. It really isn't. So my mom was a little concerned, and there's nothing broken. Everything is fine, and like I said, everything is attached and functioning. So there you go. But there have been other things that have caught my mind, my attention, stories, shows mostly, and some interesting turn of events for some of my other shows that I'm kind of sad about. So let's get into that. The end of Quantum Leap, which I think is bullshit. So from the get-go, I have loved this show. And for a lot of reasons, basically some nostalgic and heartstring attached, and others more of a curiosity and to see where the show goes and how does it carry on a legacy that is obviously bigger than the show itself. When you're dealing with legends that came before, how do you do justice to the foundation laid by, I mean, just juggernauts in what later would become like TV? And we still, you know, to this day have them. And I can guarantee you, if contracts would allow and time would allow, would have eventually shown up in the show. And that's what I think the overall hope was, that everyone kind of had this, you know, wide-eyed optimism about having, you know, characters return from the previous show. And I'm talking, of course, about Scott Bakula and Dean Stockwell. I mean, Dean Stockwell did regrettably pass away, and it happens. And I know Scott Bakula was available, and I think this was more, I don't know if it's so much a choice on his part, not wanting to return to the cast. And I know Scott has been very vocal about how much he loves his performances on Quantum Leap and how it opened doors and everything that he got to do on the show. And that's great. So I don't know if it was more a contractual thing, or maybe he just felt that, you know, let the show stand on its own. And it did a spectacular job of that. However, due to ratings and everything else, Quantum Leap did not make the cut. There was conversations leading about them going over to Peacock, which is kind of, I don't know what Peacock really is at this point. It's kind of like NBC Universal's little interesting playground or sandbox that it just kind of experiments in. It's just this weird little laboratory of mismatched shows and things. But one of the things that made it over there is one of the Law and Order's organized crime unit. Evidently, there was a huge difference in ratings between the two show. And this was kind of... It's hard to read sometimes because it just hurts. But basically the executive came out and said that there are 3 million people that watch Quantum Leap versus the 5.3 million people that watch the SVU stuff, and it just seriously didn't make the cut. Unfortunately, Quantum Leap was also down 20% or 23% in viewers and 34% in demo, which, again, demographics I never really buy a whole lot into, because people like what they like. I don't know if you can curtail or target a specific demographic anymore, because everybody's so diverse and culturally different and like different things, that I think I know you wanted to zero in on your market share and you know appeal to those people, but I think there's an opportunity to step outside that norm. But in the battle of ratings, Quantum Leap didn't make the cut, which is sad, because there was a lot to the show, and I really liked Ben, and I liked everybody, and Ernie Hudson coming back as Magic from the original series, and I think we were hoping to see more of that, to just kind of see the impact as years went on. And we did see an interesting twist and a butterfly effect at the end of the current season of last season, the final season, and I was hoping to just kind of see that more evolved. And we didn't get too much of the sci-fi stuff. We did see a lot of drama. We did see a lot of human compelled stories and very humanistic things. And it was great. There were some very heartfelt moments. And I think there were a lot of like wins, but in the category of like misses, in my opinion, I still missed the dialogue. I still missed hearing Sam talk about what was going on. I missed the relationship between Al and Sam, which was kind of the driving force behind everything. Because here Sam is trapped back in time, and Al's just trying to get him home. And the relationship with Ben was a little bit different, as we're trying to work out a relationship, and I did this for you, and the back and forth that really never gelled. And I think that's probably part of it. When you detach away from the key humanistic component that's helping drive the story, and it gets a little muddy, it gets a little murky. I know how it played into the story to help progress this season, which was fun and it was interesting, but we kind of got away from some of the other elements that were established in the first season. The Dark Leaper, which, again, great idea. Something that was left hanging out there from the original series. And they paid homage to it. Don't get me wrong. It's not like they turned their back on the ancestry of the show. So that, I don't think, was ever the issue. Where people got detached, I don't know. Maybe it just got too soft, and those are actually the words from the executive. I don't know, but I am sad to see it go. I still think it had another season left in it, and I think we could have seen kind of this huge climactic end where we finally see Sam come home. I mean, of course, there's a train wreck waiting for him because we don't know what happened to the previous Quantum Leap people or any of the other ones that were part of the project. They never really dwelt on that aspect of the show, which I think was a miss. I think to where are they now would have been fun. We got kind of what happened to Al's family, and they were a component to the story. We had magic, so we got kind of that connection. We never did really find out what happened with Sam's brother or, you know, the rest of that. And I think that, again, a huge miss. Maybe they just wanted to touch on the past just enough to keep people interested as they tried to tell a new story. And there's nothing wrong with that. I guess what this really comes down to and means to me is I have Monday nights free for whatever. And that's the end of Quantum Leap, unfortunately, and we will see what they try to put in its place. I mean, I got plenty of watch on Peacock right now in the form of The Traitors. Love that show, and I like every rendition of it. Like the UK one, the New Zealand one, the Australian one. Holy shit. This is amazing, and I'm having so much fun with The Traitors. I hope they come back. I want to see more of this show just because of how diabolical and how just vicious it is. Some of the characters have been fun, some not so fun, but that's got my attention on Peacock right now, and I could go into a huge, long dissertation on how awesome The Traitor is, how just it goes so far into the human mind and the psyche and what it goes, and dishonesty and just loyalty, and it's really interesting, because, again, I'll stop right there. Just watch it, because there's so many things, and again, like I said, I like the human condition. I love seeing how these things work out, and it is fun. It's not like Toughest 100 or Physical 100, but it is in that kind of realm that I want to see more. Show me more. And that The Traitors definitely delivers on a whole new level. In the span of time since we last spoke, of course, the Shogun series that was on Hulu FX was nothing short of amazing. I absolutely adore that show. It was visually stunning, impactful, just quality. And at the end of the series, the story, you really have to kind of stop and think of just like, what did I just watch? And there are so many things and undertones that went on that it wasn't until like the end where everything kind of like synced up that you're like, holy crap, this man is just supervillain genius. So I know that a lot of people are raving about it, and I'm in that same boat. I think that if you haven't watched it, you need to. And it's so complicated, and there's so many. I mean, it's not complicated, but it is. And without like diving into it too much, I don't want to cheat you out of any of the experiences, because all of these characters deserve their time. And in fact, there are some standouts in this series that are absolutely mind-blowing. There is a particular character that's playing both sides, and he is amazing. He steals the narrative every single time he's like in the scene, or how the story is projected, to see how he navigates this landmine that he is put out there is scary. It is absolutely stupefying. There you go. There's your Harry Potter word of the day. But the question now, of course, everyone is like, what about Shogun Season 2? And I think everyone's seeing just how much of a hit this has been. Everyone's jumping on. So as of last week, and everyone in a mad scramble, especially FX, has made strides forward. And one of the big key things is to get the lead actor to come back. The gentleman that played Lord Yoshi Torunaga is key. The man is a master of strategy and deception, and just how he orchestrated the entire element. I mean, and everything is actually based on a novel. All 10 episodes were, I don't want to say loosely based, but heavily adapted from James Cavill's novel. And it's amazing the time and the energy and everything that went into this to achieve. And I don't think by any stretch of the imagination, it's accidental. Everyone that put into this is dedicated to the craft, and to pull off the look and the demeanor and everything that went to it is great. So now the question is, what happens? Now, Sonata, who played Torunaga, is the key element. And he has signed a deal with FX moving forward. So now comes the figuring and the head-scratching, and how do we do this, and what do we do, and all everything else that comes with trying to pull this off. So what happens next? That's a great question. But we are moving forward with a season two, and where, when, and what that looks like is a mystery at the moment, and it's an exciting mystery because I'm excited to see the show come back. I want to see more about the story. I want to see how 17th century Japan comes together, and how much of the novel is left to be adapted. How much more story can they pull from it, and history and everything else that went into the novel, into the show, to continue that? That's what I'm excited for. So if you haven't watched Shogun, it's on Hulu. Go watch it now. What else? In the world of animation, let's jump over there real quick. Crisis on Infinite Earths Part 2 is out. I haven't watched it yet for the main reason of time. I know I could probably stream it, but again, tactile person. I want to actually go buy the disc and, you know, enjoy it and have all of the extra added tchotchkes and downloads and behind the scenes and scenes of old cartoons that I've already watched a million times. Yes, I am that person. I'm going to watch it from top to bottom, soup to nuts, whatever you want to do. Dominus Patris Victorum. But it is out, and I'm of two minds of it because I didn't mind the first one, but I didn't, like, overly enjoy it. I didn't, like, jump up and down with glee as much as I had hoped I was going to. It's still entertaining, and it's still Crisis on Infinite Earths, but there's still so much, and it's a different perspective than what I expected. And not that that's bad, but I don't know if it's the right choice. And I'm okay with some of the choices, and maybe it's a bigger picture type of situation. When originally I had found out about this, and I know I talked about it on the podcast, they have broken this up over three different animated films. Great choice. Totally makes sense. On board. So maybe it's more of like a grander picture once you step back and you can see all of the components moving together in unison to make this story. Maybe it cheers things up. There are elements that I enjoyed from the first one. I loved the Batman kind of like, ooh. So to see more of what's going on will be interesting. And to see what they choose to do? Because there's some heartbreak coming. There's some heavy action about to come if we're following the comic book. We're kind of following the comic book as it is. It's loose, but this is where it gets messy. And messy's good. Messy's fun. Messy shakes up the boat. But I haven't watched it yet. If you are like me and didn't know it was out right away and you don't pay attention to dates anymore because that's the world we live in, then welcome aboard. Go on, stream it, let me know your thoughts. Also in animation, there's The End of the Bad Batch, which it ended kind of how I expected. Everyone's trying to figure out the timeline of when Omega leaves the planet, and it's fine, it's great. I kind of wanted a little bit more, but I don't know. The question is, and I said this to a fellow Star Wars fan, they're like, what more would you have wanted? And that's a great question. Maybe I would have wanted more clone trooper stuff. Maybe I needed more answers as far as like Rex and what all happens there, and Cody, and some of the clones that I was kind of waiting to see a little bit more representation of, and we didn't get that. So I don't know. It does try to give you the warm butterfly feeling that we usually get of hope at the end of a Star Wars flick or series. But all in all, it was fine. It ends the arc. I know something more is coming. Filoni wouldn't go through all of the trouble of setting this up without having a continuation, without having a story. So what that next story is, we'll see. I don't know necessarily is the Arcolyte, which we do have a trailer out, and Carrie-Anne Moss looks great, but I'm going to wait on this. I want to wait on the Acolyte. I don't want to dive into it yet because I have too many questions, and I think this one is probably best left unspoken until we can see more. But that's just my opinion. The other animated issue that I wouldn't say issue, but I kind of was disappointed. And it's simply because of how everything kind of went about. We had May the 4th, which was Free Comic Book Day, which is a Saturday, and we get this great little snippet, this story of Star Wars Tales of the Empire, and it was fine. But here's the problem. At the end of this, this I think it's like eight, I don't even think it was eight episodes. It might have been eight. Eight episodes, which are like 15, 20 minutes, I think the longest in length per episode, I kind of ended it without really knowing what I watched. The first time I watched this, The Tales of the Jedi, there was a lot of things that were exposed. You know, the death of Waddle, there were Dooku's storyline, Ahsoka's storyline. There was so much that was key to the whole story and that I walked away with, and I still remember. Here's the problem. I barely remember Tales of the Empire. It was kind of like, I mean, I wasn't... The first story arc is not bad, and it kind of takes a page from The Mandalorian, and it deals with the Dothamir Dark Sisters and the character that we see that Ahsoka kind of comes into with the spear made out of the Beskar, and it fills in some holes. It's kind of cool and fun, and I'm not against it, but it was like, eh. And then the next story dealt more with one of the Jedi that was, and this is right out of the Clone Wars, bucked against the Council, told them that they were corrupt, and she ended up in jail. And we get kind of the rest of the story of her. And that was kind of fun. And there was a story with this Jedi, and I don't want to give away any more than necessary, but this Padawan was with Ahsoka, and during the Clone Wars, and they almost kind of gave up on her in the story, but because Anakin was there, it didn't happen. So it kind of continues her story and her being an Inquisitor. But that's kind of it. I mean, after that, it's just kind of like, eh. And even still, the Inquisitor story, it didn't really tell a whole lot, and it really didn't show a whole lot. It kind of continued an arc, or it gave an ending loosely based on, you know, these characters that I don't think really carried a whole lot of weight in the Star Wars lore overall. I mean, it's kind of nice and it's great, but I think ill-placed. You have all of these Tales of the Empire. Okay, there are so many characters in the Empire that we could have focused on that we didn't. So if it's Tales of the Empire, why are we dealing with an exiled Jedi? The Dathomir Night Witch makes sense, but the overall thing is lacking. I would have loved the Darth Vader story. Holy hell, that would have been awesome. Or even like Darth Vader hunting down a Jedi. There are a lot of things that could have done. We could have seen even like a darker Dooku story after he started working for Palpatine. Or we could have seen Palpatine as a younger Padawan. And I would love to have seen that. And I know everyone just kind of tiptoes around that story, and I don't think anyone really wants to commit to making anything canon out of that, but I think seeing Palpatine as an apprentice would have been a spectacular Tales from the Empire. Overall, May the 4th was great. Could have been better. Was all right. It's fine. I'm fine. You're fine. Everyone's fine. Everyone's fine. So, if you weren't paying attention, we did get our Godzilla King Kong review up, and it was okay. The film, the review was spectacular, of course. The key element, though, and this is what I'm more excited about, and it was in the review. If you're going to go see this film, just go see Godzilla 1 again, and you'll be much happier at the end. And I kind of agree. But as this goes on, I don't think it puts it in jeopardy, but I know that Monarch has already been renewed for a second season. And this is over on the Apple Plus side of streaming. And I know a lot of people don't have Apple Plus, and I understand that. But the fun thing about this is that the entire creative team is excited to do it. In one of the interviews that I had recently read, one actually was quoted, it wasn't designed as a limited series. And this is from the executive producer, Matt Fraction. And he told everybody that we could keep going as long as people want to keep watching. And I think that's encouraging. And I want to emphasize that this is the way we should go, and everyone wants to keep watching this, and I want to watch it. So when we see a season two, everyone is guessing right now a 2025 release, and that's fine. It's, I mean, we're already almost to June. I mean, we're halfway through May already, so I don't see a problem with a 2025 release. That means they're working on it now, and I'm all on for that. But Monarch, in my opinion, was a great series. I thoroughly enjoyed every bit of that. I loved the mystery. I loved how it was all just kind of coming together between the past and the future. I mean, there's a lot of eight-body problems that I saw similar to Monarch, and just the storytelling mirroring each other with the flashbacks. And I think that's great. I think that's amazing storytelling. And it's not a waste of the viewer's time. So by all means, please keep that coming, because so cool. What else did we see? Speaking of returns and seasons two, do I want to talk about this? Sure. Let's talk about this. So this article and this story has produced more memes in the last few days than I thought possible. And I didn't really think it would be as big. And maybe it's just been slow news days with this. But as we are speaking, as you are listening to this, and you are delighted by the nerd news that follows, James Gunn is feverishly working hard for you. He's working hard to give you a Superman film that is worthy of your viewing. And pray to God it sets up something for DC to get them completely out of the cellar. or at least maybe to the door. Let's hope. The plan for all of this is a July 11th, 2025 release. And Gunn has written, he's in there, he's directing. But the biggest conversation on all of this is the costume. Now, whether Superman should have trunks or no trunks. I mean, does it matter? I know everyone wants to see kind of like a classic Superman look. Christopher Reeves wore the trunks, but Henry Cavill did not. And it's fine, I think. So they've already made like some drastic changes. They got rid of Henry Cavill, of course, and David Cornsweet is now Superman. And Rachel Brosnahan is now portraying Lois Lane. And we have Nathan Fillion finally getting a ring, but as Guy Gardner and not as Hal Jordan, which is fine. And I know I've spoken of this in the past, but there was a picture that was released of Cornsweet in a Superman suit that looks very reminiscent of the New 52. The S is very, however, kind of Kingdom Come old school, but it looks like he's got the red trunks on. And this, there's, I can't believe I'm even talking about this, but there's two different schools of thought of whether Superman should have trunks or not. And I don't care. My issue is the story and how Superman has just been. I mean, I've never been a big Superman fan. He's kind of too goody-goody for me, but there are certain things that I expect of him, and, you know, breaking Zod's neck wasn't one of them, and it's fine, and I've gone back and forth on that particular topic. But Gunn has a vision, and let's face it, some vision is better than no vision, and that has always been DC's problem. You had Marvel start out strong out of the gate. They knew where they were going. They knew what they wanted to do. We've had people able to shape that whole 10-year run. Even Gunn, what he did with Guardians of the Galaxy and how he brought all of that together. Nobody knew really, well, I did, but nobody knew who the Guardians of the Galaxy were. Gunn gets in there. He creates this whole new world. I walked out of the first one, again, like a child. I was so freaking excited, jumping up and down. You could have given me a balloon and some cotton candy, and I would have just been fine. So here we are. And vision helps. It really does. Because if you look at the storytelling, I mean, Dune is a perfect example. That someone who has a vision, they know what they're doing. They have it laid out. They have it roadmap. So whether or not Superman shows up in trunks is irrelevant. The question that everyone should be asking is, does Gunn have a plan? And I'm sure he does. But how does that plan shape the DCU? And will this be a hit? Is it too late for DC? Just mull that over for a second. Is it? Do we care anymore? Has the superhero bubble popped? Or are we just starved enough for some decent story to come along that we might go down another 10-year rabbit hole of comic book films? Do we need another 10 years of comic book films? Yes, I know. That was the follow-up question. And all of them are valid, and we've got characters that are recognizable and beloved by many. And we have the actors who have the same sentimental attachment to them that we do. Nathan Fillion has been trying to become a Green Lantern for, I don't know, 20 years at this point. I mean, all the way back to the Firefly days, I'm sure he's wanted to be a Green Lantern. He's voiced the character in cartoons. You can't tell me that doesn't mean you don't want to be a ringslinger on the big screen and do it. So Nathan has his shot. But does Gunn have the shot? Does he know what he's doing? History would say yes. The track record would say yes. Everyone is leaving Marvel to go join Gunn. So the staff says yes. Everyone has put a lot of faith on Gunn. This is a lot to put on a man's shoulders. So if it hits but doesn't hit as good, is it Gunn's fault? Of course, that will be the take. We don't know what the story is. There's a lot of things that have yet to be revealed, but everyone's focused on the trunks. That's a magic trick waiting to happen, ladies and gentlemen. Let me tell you. I saw the picture of the suit, him getting set up with whatever massive explosion is in the background. And it's funny. I've seen a lot of memes for the new costume. So the question remains, what does Gunn do? I'm personally on the fence. I don't think another bad DC movie is going to kill the franchises. It will just be the normal, well, we kind of expected that. But if it's a hit, and it could be a big one, we could see a sudden shift in loyalties. We could see things change drastically for the franchise overnight, because we all know what Robert Downey Jr. did for Iron Man. And speaking of Vision and looking to what's best, I'm happy to report, because everyone knows how much I love Tron, that Jeff Bridges is actually returning for Tron 3 Ares. And this is probably the best news that I've had all day. And I've argued about this with a lot of people, but it's just not Tron if we're not going to have, you know, Finn in there, or at least his son, or continue that story. And as much as I love Jared Leto, I mean, I'm sure there's other people out there that can play villains, but sure, let's throw Jared Leto back in there as playing Ares is, I'm sure, going to be fine, and we'll see what happens. And I'm indecisive right now because they don't have enough information, and I want this to work so desperately bad, and to see all of this. Well, and this wasn't even like on my radar. What ended up happening is, and this is a quote from Jeff Bridges, I'm heading off this Saturday to play a part in the third installment of the Tron story. He continued on to say, Jared Leto is the star of this third one. I'm really anxious to work with him. I admire his work. So this came through on Variety. And I'm again, extremely ecstatic to see somebody coming back that I would think want to be part of the legacy, or at least help continue on with the story. And I know there's the age thing, because I think Jeff Bridges is in his 70s at this point. But he went on and continued to say, because the CGI stuff and all of that is a huge issue. So this is a direct quote from him. I didn't like the way I looked in it, and he's referring to the last Tron. I felt like I looked more like Bill Maher than myself. It was kind of bizarre, and that's fine. He didn't look right, and everybody kind of commented on how that all broke down. Then he went on to say there's going to be even less AI stuff in Tron Ares, and that the production is using more practical sets for the new project. There are beautiful sets that I have seen, and he's excited to see it. So to see that we're getting back to practical sets and to do more hands-on is brilliant, and it's what I want to see. I'm tired of seeing, I mean, as cool as explosions and all of that are, and the CGI stuff, there's still something to be said for practical sets. And in fact, if you are reading our website, we did have a review for a new film that recently came out, which all they did was practical effects. Boy vs. World, which is really a unique film. Main actor does not talk. He does not speak. And it's by design. But all of the effects, the fight scenes, the choreography, all of it is practical effects. It's all wires. It's all explosions, like real explosions, not like the digital stuff. So to see these kind of things come back is refreshing, and it's fun. So if Tron is going back to more of a, you know, real practical environment, then freaking great. I mean, the original Tron was, you know, white costumes with the right lighting. So to kind of go back to that would be, I don't know, I think it's kind of fun. And like I said, huge Tron nut. Jeff Bridges is in. Flynn's Arcade is back. Let's do this. Let's get digital. in comic book news. Speaking of which, I shouldn't ignore. I actually had this on the docket last week, but totally skipped it, missed it. But the fact that it's just too fun to ignore. I don't know how many Uncle Scrooge fans are out there. I'm a huge fan of Uncle Scrooge. I think the character's great and hilarious. But there's going to be a new Uncle Scrooge comic that's coming out starting June 19th. And it's Uncle Scrooge and the Infinity Dime. And there's a bunch of different covers that are coming out for this title. Get in touch with your local comic book shop to check it out, or even just go online, because I know Marvel's been pushing a lot of it. And I'm just kind of curious, Uncle Scrooge with the Infinity Dime. I think it's like a fun title, and it's something different. And again, always looking to be entertained. And last for this week, my final take is going to be on the new Doctor Who season, which we have two new episodes that had come out this past week. And Shuti Nagagwa. I know that's the way you say his first name, in Shuti. I've been practicing, so I wouldn't completely butcher it. But Nshuti makes a very compelling doctor. Let me say that right out of the gate. I love the energy. I love the enthusiasm. And it is very, very David Tennant and Matt Smith as far as the quirkiness and the energy and the overall excitement that I think the doctor should have and to be out there. And it does feel a lot of the other doctors coming through, like Tom Baker when he was mischievous and playful. And Hartnell, I mean, even Hartnell had his moments of just kind of like, you know, quirky, kind of fun. And Shoddy does a great job of bringing the spirit of Doctor Who through his performance. And I appreciate the time, the energy, the effort. And he looks like he's having fun, because who wouldn't want this gig? I mean, are you kidding me? If I had a chance to play Doctor Who, you know, in a heartbeat, I would be on this. So the first two new episodes, they basically go right in after the Christmas special. We get Ruby Sunday's story. We get a crash course on the Doctor. And there are some elements that I'm kind of in between, and one that really is kind of setting badly with me is that Russell T. Davies has decided to continue with the Unearthly Child story arc. And I don't know, maybe they're going to rectify it, but him being not Gallifreyan and adopted and basically an only child, and the whole lost child premise is been reaffirmed. It's been confirmed. A lot of people are calling this a reboot because everyone's saying it's season one, episode one, two, and three. And I don't know if that's necessarily a good thing. There are some similarities in the story from David Tennant and Christopher Eccleston when Russell T. Davies had revitalized the franchise and brought everything together, and you could see his love for Doctor Who, and you can still see it. It's there. But there are some interesting choices that may necessarily not agree with a lot of fans out there. And I, as a hard, I wouldn't say hardcore fan, but a definite dedicated fan, am left scratching my head. I'm not sure how I feel about it. I'm absorbing all of it and kind of approaching it from the fact of a novice. We don't really know what to expect from this doctor, and if they're going to kind of not embrace the last 60 years and kind of tiptoe around it, and that's fine. It worked when we brought Eccleston into the fold and how they wanted to portray the Doctor, last of his kind. Gallifrey is gone. And that's directly addressed in the new episode, and it's like right out of the gate. And it's kind of like a quick dialogue of, okay, where do we sit? I've made it no mystery or question that I don't like Chris Chibnall. I do not like his writing. I do not like him. I do not like Sam. I don't like what he put together, okay? It's nothing to do with Jodie Whittaker. It's nothing to do with any of that. It has to do with just how bad of a writer Chibnall is. So the one thing that I have come to appreciate from Russell T. Davies, from RTD, is you never know which direction he is going to go. You can pick. I mean, I've been lucky a couple times, and I have talked about this on panels for Doctor Who of what was I was expecting to happen, and I was right more times than I was wrong. Let me put it that way. But you don't know what to expect. You don't know what's coming around the corner or what he has planned. And I think him or Chimnall retconning 60 years of a character we thought we knew is, I don't know. I don't know if it's respectful or disrespectful or just a way of continuing the story, but it's taking a lot of, you know, of the fans and kind of just like, you know, we're gonna change everything you love about this character, but he's still the same. But he's not. I don't mind the stories. The stories were good. It was the first one, Space Babies, was entertaining. And I kind of laughed, and I could see that this is very reminiscent of like Matt Smith when Amy Pond showed up, of just kind of being simple and funny and quirky. And there's a lot of a Matt Smith element here with the monster. Again, no spoilers, but it is fun. It is playful. Then we get into the next story, and it gets a little interesting and a little bit weird, and we're dealing with some very heavy topics, and we're also dealing with a child of the toy maker, essentially. So in their quest to make things more spooky or metaphysical or whatever, we're seeing an interesting direction, and we don't know where it's going, and I just keep kind of going back to the style that we've seen Russell T. Davies go. I liked the idea of the villain stealing music and making it their own, and very, very powerful, as they refer to it, gods, and how he barely survived. How the Doctor barely survived his run-in with the toy maker. So we get some interesting reveals, and of course the Russell T. Davies classic, oh, just you wait till my brother gets here, or the man behind the curtain, or, you know, vote Saxon, you know, all of these interesting little Easter eggs that continue to pop up, especially a certain lady that no one has noticed yet, but is all of a sudden showing up. So who is she? And I like the suspense. I like the questions. I like being thoughtful and looking for the different things and trying to piece the roadmap together. And it's fine. And again, if they're going to reboot it and treat it as a reboot, then I will do the same. I will do in kind. So what to expect? How big are expectations? And what we've got coming up is even more encouraging, because Stephen Moffat, who was the driving force behind Matt Smith and Peter Capaldi's Doctor, will be writing the new episode. So I'm excited to see what we have in store. We've got a lot of, I want to say heavy hitters, but I mean, you kind of expect, you know, a heavy start. We need to be a strong start, at least, to see what happens in Doctor Who surviving. It's weird to see it on Disney Plus, I'm not gonna lie, and it's a little like, ooh, I don't know, that's kind of scary for Disney. I don't even know. And the next episode is supposed to be like this, you know, galactic war-torn situation on a planet, so even more carnage, which is good. I don't know, we'll see. So am I happy with the Doctor? I've talked with other Whovians just this last weekend about it, and some like it and have the same kind of questions. Others are less than happy and think that they are kind of snubbing some of the classic Who fans. And I can see, as time progresses and stories progress, that science fiction writing has changed over the years. This may not necessarily be your Doctor. Question is, will it be your Doctor? And it could be. And Nshuti is, again, so charismatic and fun to watch right now as he figures out the doctor. I mean, I am sad to know that Ruby doesn't make it past, you know, the first season. So to have her story all wrap up and all of that, again, there's a lot of repeat feels here, because we again have like the Impossible Girl or the Pawns or and Rose. I mean, Rose was kind of like her own straightforward story, but you know, there wasn't a whole lot of mystery with her. But the other companions to follow quickly soon have that, so it's almost kind of like a rehash of that attack, that approach, that premise. And I'm not sure that's a good course of action. And I'm sure it's part of the story, and that's fine. We always need to have some kind of interesting twist. I don't think we'll see the Master anytime soon, and maybe that little finger that we saw at the end of the 60th special was the demon baddie that we just saw in the last episode, because the fingernail polish looked very similar. So perhaps, I don't know. There's a lot to unpack when you're dealing with Doctor Who, let's be honest. And to say you have it all figured out within the first couple of episodes is kind of a bit of a stretch. I'm taking it, like I said, at face value. If they're going to relaunch it, I'll treat it as such. I said that just recently, I think just a few minutes ago, actually. And I'm going to stay with that. I'm going to give it a chance. I'm going to give it a shot, just because I want it to succeed. I want my childhood, you know, sci-fi to live on, damn it. Is it bad? No. Is it great? No. I can be that much honest with you. And we'll see how it ends. Maybe a strong finish. That's what I'm hoping for. And, you know, that's my opinion. I could be wrong. What else? That is it for this week. Hopefully that was entertaining for you, because it was for me. I'm going to go smoke a cigar, watch some hockey, and enjoy the remainder of my evening. If you want to catch up with me again this Friday, you will see me at the Mother's Day film with my fellow Colorado Festival of Horror crew. And this weekend we will be at, we're not tabling, but we will be making an appearance at the Retromania show at the Arapahoe County Fairgrounds. So we're wandering around there. Dude, I'm going to get me a signed Quick Kick figure. The guy that did the voice for Quick Kick from the cartoon, he's going to be there. So Atari and I are going to go down there and get a few things signed, because that's what nerds do, right? And on that bombshell, we shall say goodbye. Tell your friends about us. Give us a like. Give us a share. Thank you for listening. But in the meantime, run fast, laugh hard, and always be kind. Good night!